Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, everybody. I want to talk about what we've done in Leicestershire. I don't put it forward as the model, just what we've done in our particular circumstances, and particularly about how we've got resources, both funding and staff resources, to implement our model. I just want to say a bit about the setting, because every place is different, and that's led us to different ways of developing our model for troubled families. And then I'm just going to go through the key steps that we've taken to get to where we've got to, which is the operational stage, putting our model into operation. So just in terms of the background, we in Leicestershire were one of the total place areas, and that really influenced us quite a lot in understanding, I think Tim mentioned it this morning, understanding that if you don't take a place-based approach, there's not just a danger, but I think a certainty that there'll be gaps in provision, that there'll be duplication in provision. So we're trying to move as a place towards integrated commissioning across a whole range of services, with limited success up until now, but certainly moving in the right direction. And we set our initially called families with complex needs in that setting, in that agenda. It also means that we've led it from the Chief Executive Department in the County Council through my team, which is a partnership-based team and a corporate team, rather than from a particular service perspective. So we truly believe we won't meet the current financial challenge without working across agencies in partnership, but in what we call a hard way, where we actually pool budgets, where we actually pool resources, where we have joint commissioning of services from third parties, or where we bring together our staff into single units. So we're taking a very place-based approach. Perhaps just to mention also at this stage that we've done a count of our families. We did the count against the original families with complex needs criteria from the DfE, and so there's some 20-odd criteria, and we found that we've got about 1,200 families in Leicestershire that had five or more of those needs or those risks or those issues, and about 2,000 families that had between two and four of those. So our ambition is to work with all 3,300 of those, 3,200, I can't add up, of those of our families, rather than just the PBR definition, which should give us about 800 families as opposed to 3,200. So what were our key steps? Well, we were one of the 16 families with complex needs pilots, so therefore we started about a year and a half ago. We went through a process around sign-up, which I'll explain in a minute. We spent quite a bit of time collecting evidence, because at that time there was very little evidence around, actually, about what worked and what didn't work, and why what didn't work didn't work. We then designed a model. Helpfully, at that point, the National Troubled Families Unit arrived, and that was supportive. We tried to provide a business case, and I'll talk about that a bit. We got some contributions, and now we're at the rollout stage. So the point was made very strongly that partnership is important and absolutely crucial from our perspective, that we started with some partnership workshops with all key stakeholders, statutory and voluntary sector, to get people's support, to get people to design, get people to agree what we were trying to achieve here. And we came up with these aims, which helpfully are pretty similar to the government and the Casey aims, of turning around the lives of families, and if we do that, then by definition we will be making savings. Very helpful to have this stated and agreed by our top partnership, Leicestershire Together as our strategic partnership, so our partnership executive, chief execs in the main, chief constable, etc., and our partnership board members, by and large, both signed up to this aim, and it's been very useful to come back to it when times have got tough, and particularly to point to those last couple of words, system change. So the ambition here was system change. The ambition was to develop and change the way we work in Leicestershire so that we're more efficient and more effective, and so we can achieve better outcomes for these families at less cost. So we did spend quite a lot of time then, about 6 months, and some people certainly within the partnership and within the County Council were quite critical of that, collecting evidence. And as I say, there was limited evidence at the time, and the evidence that's come forward since from the NatSen study of FIPS, Family Intervention Programmes, I think has been particularly helpful and particularly persuasive. But we did three things, really. We looked at the various policies that were being developed by the government at the time, many of which had an early intervention element, but more particularly we talked to our families. We talked to probably around 50 families in different settings over that 6 months, and we also talked to our practitioners, our frontline workers and our frontline managers. And helpfully, they all said the same thing, which was, it doesn't work, it's very confusing, it's very frustrating, can we look at a different way of doing things, please? And in terms of what doesn't work, what they told us was that practitioners said, well, we go and work with a family because there's an antisocial behaviour issue or there's a substance misuse issue. Sorry, we don't go and work with a family. We go and work with an individual because there's an issue. But we know really we're only dealing with the symptom. We're not really dealing with the fundamental cause here. And the point was made by a speaker earlier that if you're dealing with employment, then it's important to get ready for employment. And often an individual won't be ready for employment until a family circumstances change. Similarly, if somebody has mental health problems, it's often rooted back into issues within the family. So the practitioner said, well, actually, we're employed as a social worker or as a probation worker. We can't actually change those other things that are going on. We haven't got the resources to do it. We haven't got the permission to do it. The family said virtually the same thing. They said, we get assessed to death. Every time something happens or we need a service, somebody comes in, we have to do a separate assessment, say the same things as we said before. That worker then says, oh, yeah, we can help you. And then a few weeks later they say, well, actually, we can't help you with those other things. We can help you with this and we can help you with that. And actually, we can only help you in the next 10 weeks. And the families say they need longer-term support to change. So what this tells us, I think, is that we need to move from working with individuals, not on everything, clearly some things we still need to work with individuals on, and certainly where there's a safeguarding issue, for example, to working with families. We need to move away from individual agency approaches to integrated place-based approaches. We need to move away from short-term interventions to longer-term interventions, and we need to find a way of addressing the underlying problems the family face rather than the symptoms. And there's a term there, to work seek a stable environment for the family and to work with them for as long as it takes. And again, I think helpfully the NatSen FIP study tells us a bit about what that means, and frequently it means working with the family for a year or more. So in terms of the workforce requirement of that, I think what that tells us is that the family support workers that I'll tell you about in a bit need to work with only 5 or 6 cases a year, because that's the time it's going to take to invest in working with that family to deal with some of those underlying issues, which may be helping the adult deal with the behaviour issues around children, managing the household budget, managing themselves so they get up in time to get the kids up in time to go to school. So all those really fundamental things that require a worker actually to be in the household working with that family. So based on our evidence, and we designed a model, and this model was prepared again in partnership by a group of frontline workers, frontline managers really, rather than frontline workers, and we sense checked it against a group of senior officers from the key services, and got it signed off again, as we've done at each stage, by the partnership executive and board. And the key, we think, and again, I think the FIP study backs this up strongly, and certainly the KC unit have taken this as the way they want to encourage people to take, is the role of the family support worker. And this worker will be a dedicated worker within a generic team, because again, we want a place-based approach. What we don't want is to have different services, children's services or probation, employment, all creating a family support service separately, because otherwise we'll have half a dozen people knocking on the same family's door offering them support. So generic service for the place, dedicated workers, working with the families as long as it takes, providing that direct practical support around some things that need to be done before the family can move on, coordinating then the input of specialist services in a way that will lead to change. So again, it was acknowledged this morning by the DWP speaker that employment isn't the first thing you do. You need to do the other things first. So it's a waste of time, work programme provider being in there, providing, trying to get somebody back into work if we haven't changed the conditions to allow that to happen to start with. We also want to create a more effective team around the family. Our model is a locality model. We're a two-tier area, 7 district council within our area. So we'll have a team around the family model in each place. It might be slightly different. We want to get workers co-located wherever possible. We want lead officers from the different services. And we will need to challenge some things like commissioning of services, and I'll come back to that in a bit. We also need culture change, clearly, because it's quite interesting actually to reflect where that change may need to happen, because certainly in the work we did with practitioners, there was no need for culture change there. They were all very keen on change. At senior levels, no need for culture change there. They were pretty keen on change. I think the issue in terms of vested interests really is in the middle manager level, and that's the level that we need to tackle and get that culture change in. So that's our model. So our next stage was to say, okay, we need some money to provide this. Now, even at this time, we didn't have any indication of funding from the Troubled Families Unit. That came along while we were trying to go through preparing a business case. Effectively, we didn't prepare a business case. We couldn't prepare a business case. We had two processes going along sort of mutually supportively. We got our strategic partner, Deloitte, in and said, well, can you help us prepare a business case? And we're also working with A4E, who were employed by the Cabinet Office, you heard from Jim earlier, looking at the social impact bond opportunity. And we couldn't prepare a business case because we didn't have outcomes information in terms of cost. We didn't have unit cost information. We couldn't attribute cost and savings to particular agencies. We had the issue that a lot of the savings would go to national agencies, and difficult to get into understanding that. And we certainly found it difficult to identify cashable savings as opposed to non-cashable savings. I think everybody would agree there are savings here. How many we can cash? So when we talked to the police, we said, well, you're going to get less antisocial behaviour. We actually put a figure, as you can see, £1.6 million against that. One or two flaky assumptions, maybe. They said, well, okay, so we get less antisocial behaviour from troubled families, but what will we do? Actually, we'll just send our policemen to do other things. So quite difficult to identify where we're going to get the cashable savings from. At the end of the day, what we did was we took the 120,000 families nationally, the £9 million, divided the two together, £75,000 per family, multiply them by our number of families, and said that's 158 million is the amount that we think we spend on troubled families. We can save quite a bit of that. I think we said probably around 50 million. That's purely that. But I think we probably can save at least that. Whether we can cash it or not is another matter. And that's an issue that I have a argument with the Director of Resources at the County Council with quite often. Why then did we continue? Because there was quite a lot of challenge. We had some special meetings of our partnership executive, and people were saying, why should we invest in this? Because, you know, we can't be certain we're going to save any. We might actually invest and somebody else is going to save. So I think there were three reasons why we decided to go ahead. First of all, the evidence we'd collected, which was pretty powerful in terms of why what we were doing wasn't working and what would work better. Secondly, the National Troubled Families Programme had come along by then, so there was the impetus from government and Prime Minister and Louise Casey's unit to make a difference. Thirdly, I think a general recognition, not just around troubled families, but around health and older people, that we need to work differently to manage demand, because if we can't manage demand from ill health, from older people needing intensive care from troubled families, then certainly public services will not be able to provide, under the new financial circumstances, anywhere near enough support in the future. And finally, I think the NatSen study, which hopefully you all know about, the one published by the Casey unit back in December, was particularly powerful, I think. And these stats, actually, we used the NatSen approach to calculate the savings in Leicestershire, or the improved outcomes, I should say, in Leicestershire. The NatSen report was 4,500, I think, families that had gone through a FIP. This was only 50, so it's nowhere near as statistically reliable, but it gives similar results in terms of improvements in outcomes. And at the end of the day, this is what I hold on to as the evidence that if we work in a family intervention programme way, then we can actually make a difference. So having got the agreement of all the partners that we should continue, I then went round and discussed with everybody what contribution they might make, which was turned out to be a much more positive exercise than I expected. From the County Council's point of view, what we've done is we've covered the amount that we've assumed we'll get from the Troubled Families Unit, the payment by results, which we've assumed will be £2.2 million out of £2.6 million. And as has been said earlier, we're not necessarily that worried about getting all of the reward if that means we miss our most troubled families, which the data suggests we might do. So we've covered that. We've added an extra £3.6 million into the programme, plus £2 million towards the cost of running the programme in terms of staffing. District councils have been very supportive. All seven of them have contributed cash, and they've also contributed in kind by offering accommodation for the family support workers and management, local management of those workers. Probably the most disappointing has been the criminal justice sector. We only got £100,000 from the police for just for year one, because understandably they want to talk to the Police and Crime Commissioner about the future. We also think it's really crucial that we use the DWP's ESF investment. Now, for Leicestershire, that's worth about £2 million, working with about 1,900 families. As you heard earlier, from DWP, not all of that will be troubled families, but we think effectively most of it will be. So we've made an assumption that that resource will work with 1,200 families. The provider, Working Links, has been really positive in working with us, and they see themselves, as we do, as part of our programme. So 1,200 of our 3,300 families will be met in terms of family support work by the ESF programme. The key change, though, we've made during the summer was to say, well, hang on, we've got this additional resource, but we already know that certainly within the County Council we've got lots of staff who work with families. Probably not in the way we want to in future. They probably work only in our Strengthening Families team. They work for 12 weeks, 0 to 5s, I think it's 6 weeks. So too short term in terms of the way we want to work in future, but they do. So let's not carry that on, because we know from the databases they're the same families. So what we're going to do is we're going to take out from within the County Council all the workers who do or could or should work in a family support way and put them into a single unit. That unit will be based in the Chief Exec's Department for the moment. We think there'll be about 50, maybe 40, maybe 60 staff in that unit. So that will provide, I'm really keen on this, because I think what it will do is it will provide us a resource into the future. So when we lose this 3-year funding, we'll have that resource, or at least most of it, left at the end of it. So we're at the process now of implementing. We've brought together our safest group of workers, if you like, in terms of risks around safeguarding and so on, into a single grouping. They're not employed by the same agency. So we've got about 10 staff within the County Council, previously FIT workers and one or two others. We've got 5 staff who are employed by Melton Borough Council as FIT workers. And we're going to fund those. And we've got about 10 staff that have been employed so far by the ESF provider. So we've got about 25 staff at the moment working close to what we want to work in terms of our model. And they're working with about 200 families. So that's our start. We're going to grow that over a period of time, up until next April, which is our sort of overall go live date. So we're thinking about how we use that funding overall. We certainly want to employ some additional family support workers, and we'll use our cash to do that. The point's been made very clearly that there's some training and development to do here. We need to spend on that. System certainly is a real problem area. The point's been made very well. We're going to have to spend some there. At the moment, everything's a bit clunky. You have to go out and check things either on the telephone or by paper. We need to develop some IT systems that do that better. But I also think we're going to have to put quite a bit of money into commissioning costs, because what's going to happen is once we get this started, if it works properly, is the family support worker is going to say, really important that we get this person into a substance misuse program. And the substance misuse provider is going to say they don't meet the threshold. So we've got to, over time, and that's why we've set up a new commissioning commissioning board within our partnership structure just for troubled families, because over a period of time we'll have to address that as a wider issue. But in the meantime, we're going to have to find ways of putting some extra money into the process to say, okay, they may not meet the correct threshold, but we've got to get that, because that's the key thing for this family, is to address that substance misuse issue. So we're going to put some money aside for that purpose. So just a few conclusions, therefore. The first is that, as I'm sure we all recognise, you need to get your partners on board, but if one or two are being sticky, you don't wait forever. And I recognise that a lot of areas who perhaps weren't working on this before, you've got to get started quickly. So there's temptation to start small in a particular area, and clearly, you know, that's fine if that's the circumstances you're in. But please grow it as on a partnership basis as soon as possible, because in terms of team around the family, making sure you have those housing services in place, etc., you do need all those partners on board, otherwise it won't work. We need good evidence for change. Fortunately, I think there's a lot of it available nationally now, so you don't have to collect your own. Don't prepare a full business case because you can't do it, and I don't think anybody can. We're going to work with the Troubled Families Unit along with a few other areas to try to identify what we need to do to enable us to do that better in future. Pooled budget is the way forward as far as I'm concerned, because that gives some joint accountability across all the partnership who have invested money in it. It's there in their interest to make it work. So if the district councils put money in our case in a two-tier area, they provide the housing services. If we're having trouble getting access to housing services when we need it, then clearly they have a vested interest in putting that right. Don't just do the PBR if you can help it. Clearly you might want to start with the PBR measures, but they don't count the fact. From our perspective, our 1,200 troubled families, we think the PBR probably only pick up a couple of hundred of those. So it isn't. We're not going to be working with all the most troubled families we can. It needs to be sustainable beyond the 3 years, and I'd certainly echo Wendy's point that it's crucial over the next couple of years that we really collect good outcomes so we can show the change that's been made by our programme, because that's the only way people are going to invest in it in future. Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.